yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. The show is Alternative Visions. Okay, this week we're going to turn our attention and focus to the American political scene. We've been talking a lot about global instability and what's going on elsewhere around the world, in Europe, Greece, Ukraine, Japan, China, etc. Well, now we're going to look back at U.S. politics as a continuation. Last week, and the week before, we talked a lot about first quarter U.S. GDP numbers, which are going to turn out negative, not 0.2%. You watch next week, 29th of May, when the numbers come out, we will have been very clearly in a negative GDP, maybe even as deep as -1% growth, and the numbers aren't looking all that encouraging for the second quarter GDP anyway, so looks like we're still on what I predicted would be a stop-go scenario in the U.S., and of course other countries the same thing, their stop-go, except their stop is more of a stop and less of a go. But it's all the same picture globally. But let's turn to the solutions to this. You know, the solutions have to be political, and this is a good time to talk about American politics and the upcoming 2016 presidential and national elections, the race of which has already begun. Hillary Clinton's in the pack, leading with a 60% vote likelihood among the nominee for nomination. And but we have some other players here on the left, liberal, progressive, I don't know what you would call it, spectrum. And I want to talk specifically about Bernie Sanders and his jumping into the race on May 1st here recently to run for the Democratic Party nomination. And also, not quite as far left maybe, but pretty close, Elizabeth Warren, who is clearly being courted to run. She hasn't announced, more of a shadow candidate, I guess. Bernie's an actual candidate. So she's within the very far left wing of the Democratic Party as a potential candidate, and then Bernie is formally outside the Democratic Party as an independent from Vermont, considers himself a social democrat. In Vermont, he's been there for 25 years, since 1990. And is the senator from Vermont, for those of you offshore here listening to this who don't know quite who he is. But it's a significant development here as to, you know, what may happen in the next election cycle here in 2016. We have some voices on the left of the spectrum, Warren and Sanders, and we want to talk about Sanders here, and I have two great guests to do that with here today. Let me introduce them. I have Steve Early, a longtime union activist at various levels in CWA, and many years. We've had him on the show before talking about his most recent book, which, by the way, let me give it another plug. It's an excellent book. It's called Save Our Unions, Dispatches from a Movement in Distress, published by Monthly Review. Take a look at it, folks. Steve and I have had conversations and on this, and I'm sure we will continue as the labor movement continues to struggle in this very terrible time in which we find ourselves. Okay, Steve has also been very active in the City of Richmond Coalition, where some real folks have been able to take over key positions in the city government. Richmond, clearly a working-class city, dominated by Chevron Oil Company. And Steve has been very active in that as well. And I would add he's also a colleague of mine on the Green Party Shadow Cabinet. Welcome, Steve.
Bring me back, Jack.
Okay, and I also have Alan Benjamin. Alan is no less a long-time experienced union and political activist at various levels. He, I believe, is on the executive committee of the Labor Fight Back Network, of progressive union folks trying to revitalize the labor movement in various ways. He's also editor of the Organizer newspaper, a union newspaper, progressive socialist union newspaper. Take a look at the Organizer. He's a delegate to the San Francisco Central Labor Council for many years, member of OPE Union. Alan, you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, very good. Well, let me throw a question. You know, we sort of discuss these things freewheelingly, and you know, let me just say a little bit as a background here for Sanders, for our listeners who may not know of him. You know, he is a senator from Vermont. Was first elected in 1990 to the House of Representatives, and during his 8 terms, pretty much had a very close working relationship with the Democratic Party, who didn't field any candidates against him when he ran for the Senate in 2006 or 2000 and 2012. So he is outside the Democratic Party, but there is a clear understanding of the relationship between the Democratic Party and Bernie within the state of Vermont. Now, Bernie has announced his candidacy, and Bernie has a number of very good positions on the various issues that are really challenging the conditions here in the U.S. We know about this terrible income inequality trend, which is getting worse and worse. Bernie, of course, has spoken out against that. He's spoken out against money in politics, growing money in politics. And, boy, we haven't seen anything about billionaires and millionaires in politics yet. You wait until 2016. This is a real wild card. And we're seeing it already in some very even local elections where these billionaires are spending millions and millions of dollars, even at the state-level elections. We had one here recently in California where billionaires and Chamber of Commerce and others in Southern California have pumped probably $10 million into this state legislature campaign here that prevail as a result of all this money. Well, we're going to see a flood of money unlike ever before coming out here very, very soon in this next election. Anyway, Bernie has talked against that. He, of course, he's taken a position against the Trans-Pacific Free Trade Agreement, Obama's favorite proposal here to send more U.S. jobs overseas. He's taken positions on free public college education, and has called for a grassroots movement. Now, however, to quote Bernie, just to inject some controversy here, Bernie, in a recent CBS News interview, said, if you want to mobilize people, it's hard to do it outside the two-party system. Okay, so that's a key question, I think. You know, even though he's raising these progressive issues, does it make any difference if you do it within the two-party system formally, which is Elizabeth Warren, or just on the fringe of the two-party system, you know, de facto independent but essentially working very closely? Is the two-party system a solution to it? I would raise the question to stimulate some debate here. And you know, we might call this show here Bernie Sanders and the Organizational Question in American Politics as a theme. Anyway, I've yacked on this enough here. I'm going to throw it out to my two guests and have them answer the question. You know, obviously, are Elizabeth Warren and Sanders raising many of the same points about the economy? Is there anything really different between Warren and Sanders, and is the solution within the Democratic Party? Why don't you take that, Steve?
Well, Jack, I think there's quite a bit of difference between Warren and Sanders. I've known Bernie for 40 years. I was a union rep for the Communication Workers of America for three decades in New England, and we had members in Vermont, telephone company, and so been very involved as a national union rep with working with CWA members in Vermont who were very involved in many of Bernie's campaigns, who in return got tremendous support from him as a congressman and senator on various strikes and organizing efforts that we were involved in and other unions were involved in Vermont. And our union has also been a strong supporter of the Vermont Progressive Party, which Bernie has also aided over the years, which is the most successful progressive third party in the country. I think, you know, Bernie has a pretty singular career in U.S. politics that some of the nitpickers today seem to want to kind of minimize or downplay or overlook. You know, he's run for state or county or federal office 20 times in the last 45 years in Vermont. He's won 16 times, and or excuse me, 14 times. He's a pretty good track record of success, both as mayor of Burlington, as you mentioned later, as congressman and senator. And he's never run as a Democrat. He's always been a progressive independent or in his early races back in the 1970s, running with a third party called the Liberty Union Party in Vermont. You know, he has the Democrats did use to run candidates against Bernie. There was a lot of conflict with the Vermont Democrats when he emerged as the independent progressive mayor of Burlington in 1981, and then supported the creation of a progressive caucus on the Burlington City Council, which became the statewide third party, the Progressive Party, which to this day runs against Democrats and Republicans alike. So I think he has a long history of working outside the Democratic Party. He's never been a registered Democrat. And, you know, he made a pragmatic decision in deciding to run for president this year and next that really the only way anybody's going to pay attention to you, sadly, is to run as a Democratic primary candidate. And but that in no way should detract from his long record of creating the space for and actively contributing to building one of the strongest state-level third-party movements anywhere in the country.
So is he a member of that, what is it, Vermont Progressive Party? Has he been a member of that in all his tenure there in Vermont? Or
no,
is he
I think,
independent of that?
Well, he runs, the Progressive Party of Vermont runs state and local candidates, doesn't run federal candidates, and Bernie runs as an independent.
As part of the Progressive Party of Vermont or as a true independent?
He's listed as an independent.
Oh, okay.
Progressive Party.
Okay. He's not part of that party then. He's not part of the party or the party supports
him. He created the space for the party. Just about everybody who's been a successful Vermont progressive candidate for the state Senate, the state House of Representatives, they now have a delegation of 10 in Montpelier, the state capital. Anybody who's ever been elected to Burlington City Council when he was mayor or since he was mayor, has been part of his network of supporters. He has encouraged people to run for office as Progressive Party candidates. He has contributed money to their campaigns. He's endorsed them without dominating the party. I actually think it's healthy that a charismatic figure like Bernie is not the dominant figure in the Vermont Progressive Party. He's created space for the development of secondary leadership. It's very unusual. And legitimized running outside the major party system in Vermont over the last 30 years that progressives have struggled to build a viable third party, which has not been the case on the left in just about any other state in the country.
Has Bernie ever endorsed and supported progressive candidates running against Democrats outside the state of Vermont?
Well, in the last year or so that he's been barnstorming around the country, when he made his stop here in Richmond last fall, he supported our Richmond Progressive Alliance slate for the city council. I mean, our elections here locally are nonpartisan, but the slate included a prominent Green or former Mayor Gail McLaughlin. He supported some labor-backed independents last month when he was out in Chicago prior to the mayoral and city council elections there. He supported dissident Democrats in other states. I mean, he's been pragmatic, flexible, and ecumenical in who he has supported around the country, trying to, I think, in a good way, promote bottom-up, you know, local progressive electoral initiatives, which is what we need more of to really, you know, build a base for the left in electoral politics at the local level, which is where you get more done than running candidates inside or outside the Democratic Party, you know, for president every 4 years, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Alan, why don't you take up that same question? What's your position on that and interpretation and so forth on, you know, Bernie as an independent within Vermont and supporting independent movements, third-party movements outside the Democratic Party? It seems to me, you know, that there's two Bernie Sanders, one that wants to really mobilize people, you know, independently, locally, and so forth, and raises all the right issues and so forth. But then there's Bernie Sanders, who may have this understanding with the Democratic Party, both within Vermont and outside, and doesn't really build a movement, the organizational question. And I wonder if raising the right issues on policies today is sufficient. I mean, we all know the problems. There's no lack of problems in this country, and there's no lack of agitation and concern and activity at the grassroots. But, you know, as I've said before on this show, it seems we continually chase single-issue politics and identity politics, and we don't really come together as a movement and with an organizational expression of it. That's just my particular view. But, Alan, what's your take on this?
Well, I want to say that Steve and I went to college in Vermont back in the day. We worked locally on various initiatives. I began working closely with Bernie when he was with the Liberty Union Party. He was the advisor of our chapter of the Young Socialist Alliance in both most of our chapter, which we had up in Burlington, and he helped the campaign of the Socialist Workers Party, Linda Jeness and Andrew Pulley, in 72. He helped us put together the events. He would tell us that up until that time, supported the candidates of the Socialist Workers Party and worked with the party, though he was very much independent. I think what Steve says is very, very true. He always kept his distance from organized political parties, carved out his own space, worked with everybody, very ecumenical, and we had a tremendous amount of respect for him. I know that within the Liberty Union Party, when he made a jump, and he'd always say, you know, you're going to vote for Democrats, hold your nose. When he stumped for Mondale, I think that was, what, 84, a lot of folks in Liberty Union Party said, wait a second, you're crossing the line, because here he actually campaigned for Mondale as opposed to just, you know, issue his traditional hold your nose. And when the war, the first war on Iraq took place around the issues of Kuwait, and then the war in ex-Yugoslavia, where he openly supported both initiatives on the war. A lot of other folks who I worked with in Vermont over the years said, wait a second, these aren't secondary questions in the U.S. politics today, the issue of war and peace, military. So these I don't think are nitpicking questions. They're real ones that have you know, divided a lot of his supporters on the ground. Having said that, he is absolutely firm on key questions: Social Security, defense of Social Security and Medicare, single payer health care, pensions. All, you know, very, very fundamental questions for our unions. So we have a situation today where Most of the people I work with in the trade union movement are galvanized by Bernie and hope against hope that he can create some space for discussion, for issues. He's taken on the billionaires and a very populist message. But the question came before us very concretely last weekend. We held our second National Labor Fight Back Conference in Rutgers, New Jersey. And what we decided was, I think, the right thing. We said, as a conference, we are committed to running and building a movement from the bottom up. Labor community, independent labor community candidates, and particularly getting the unions to break from their support and reliance on the Democratic Party, which all of us, whether we were Bernie Sanders supporters or not, characterized as a party of the bosses, following the message we learned, and some of us or others we reaffirmed with Tony Mazzocchi of the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union, that the bosses have two parties, we need one of our own. We all agreed that we had to begin from the bottom up, breaking out of that stranglehold of the two parties. And what we did was we said, we're a network, we're not a party, we're not democratic centralist in that sense, you have to go with a majority. We said everybody will work with the candidates that they choose, but we as a network are committed to building this independent movement. We'll work with Bernie on those issues, the single issues that he's fighting for, and he's an endorser of our Labor Fight Back Network. He sent greetings, wasn't able to make the conference, but had wanted to be there. We value that. But at the same time, we've told him privately, and many of us have spoken to him, saying that we don't think the vehicle to do that is a Democratic Party, that it sends a wrong message. It sends the message that this can be used as our space to advance our interests, when we know that all the good things that he says and does will ultimately be turned over to Hillary Clinton, whether he likes it or not. And Hillary will give lip service, the idea of moving the party a bit center-left. She'll give lip service, as she's already done. Income inequality is her newfound, a big revelation, when we know that as soon as she becomes president, if she becomes president, which seems to be the most likely scenario, all the promises, all the rhetoric will go out the window, because it's a party run, controlled, and owned by the bosses. So those aren't minor questions. So how we work with Bernie independently, build a movement from below without supporting and getting into this whole Democratic Party thing, is really, I think, the key. So we'll be working, we'll be doing a lot of work closely with Bernie and his supporters without getting hooked into the Democratic Party, which is a trap for social movements. It's where they go to die.
Well, okay. Interesting position. Steve, you want to comment on that at all? I mean, Bernie raises an interesting point that, if he doesn't do it within the primaries here in the Democratic Party, he's not going to get any voice, and his ideas aren't even going to get any attention and raised. At least, he will be on the agenda there and can raise the issues by debating. I presume they will have their debates at some point, and maybe not. He'll be included. We'll see. But it's a legitimate tactical question, isn't it? That if I don't do it within the Democratic Party primaries here, it won't get any airing. On the other hand, Alan points out very clearly that, so what? So you raise these issues, and Hillary moves left in her statements, and that don't mean anything, because we saw what that meant in 2008 with Obama. All his progressive positions didn't mean a diddle. And certainly Hillary is from the same party mode or cut, and we shouldn't expect anything different from her either. They tell you what they want, what you want to hear, and then they go off and do what they want anyway. So any comment on that, Steve?
Well, I think the big problem is every 4 years, we have this presidential election circus. we haven't done enough of the kind of bottom-up, movement-building, base-building work that we need to do to strengthen the left throughout the country. Yet there's pressure of some sort on somebody to, you know, run for president. And, you know, let's be frank about this. Over the last 100 years, good people on the left, progressives, socialists, have tried to do this inside the Democratic Party and outside the Democratic Party. And, you know, you had the La Follette campaign in 1924 that, you know, probably was the high point of these outside the Democratic Party efforts. The Wallace campaign, also under the progressive banner in 1948. The Nader campaign in 2000. You had people who've tried to go within the Democratic Party to provide a kind of left alternative. Jesse Jackson's primary campaigns in 1984 and 88, when he got, 6 or 7 million votes and galvanized a lot of union support. You've had a sort of faint echo of that strategy, if you can call it that, recently from Denis Kucinich. But, you know, looking back over the last 100 years and excluding the earlier period where the Socialist Party of America did have a mass base, dues-paying members by the tens of thousands and hundreds of elected local officials, and you had national presidential campaigns by Debs and others that did connect with that membership and that organizational base and did help build it. I don't think you can point to much over the last 100 years in terms of electoral campaigning at the presidential level, inside or outside the Democratic Party, that left much of an organizational footprint behind. Nader's campaign in 2000, which I actively supported, didn't strengthen the Green Party. The Green Party fractured 4 years later. Its most recent standard bearer, my old Boston area neighbor, Jill Stein, who I voted for numerous times, got a fifth or sixth of Nader's vote total when she ran last time. So, you know, Bernie made a pragmatic choice to run in an arena where he's going to get into 6 televised debates with Hillary Clinton and whoever else jumps into the race. He's going to get taken more seriously. He's doing what Ralph Nader himself has recommended he should do, rather than take the route that Ralph did with the Greens in 2000. And, if you're going to do it, which I'm not that enthusiastic about for the reasons I just mentioned, I think he's doing it in a way that's going to garner more attention.
But what do you say about raising issues and ideas that simply get co-opted and go nowhere once elections occur with the two-party system?
Yeah, Jill Stein raises issues and ideas that go nowhere, relatively speaking, you know, when she runs for president as the candidate of the Green Party. And I'm not even clear, you know, how her earnest and wonderful efforts contribute much to the building of that party. I just think it's a structural problem, you know, that party building of the sort that we would like to see go on in this country, has to be from the bottom up and has to be year in and year out, not just every 4 years around somebody running for an office in a hopeless quest, you know, a propaganda campaign, a symbolic gesture, whether it's undertaken outside or inside the Democrats. And I'm no fan of the Democrats. Never voted for them, for the presidency, and don't intend to anytime soon. But, I think Bernie wants to run in a way that is going to have an impact, hopefully, on the, you know, how issues are framed, what issues are injected into the debate. Is he the perfect candidate on foreign and military policy? Hey, you know, in the American left, you could run Noam Chomsky for president, and there'd be people lining up to criticize him for positions he's taken over the years on foreign and military policy questions that they disagree with. I mean, I think that the most fertile field for, you know, Bernie Sanders' activity is in the labor movement, just as it was during Jackson's 2 races. You know, we could really help provide, at least during the primaries, some union activists with kind of an alternative poll. Otherwise, it's just going to be this pathetic and humiliating herding of union people behind Hillary Clinton sooner rather than later.
Well, the examples you give since the early 80s, though, are all examples of trying to make change by raising different positions and ideas, either within the margin, the left progressive margin of the Democratic Party, or just outside the margin, and by, you know, your whole own historical examples, they've failed very clearly. And, of course, the Green Party is not necessarily an indictment of all parties outside the Democratic Party. It may just be the problem of that structure and the lack of a real base, broad base for the Green Party, and that's why it's failed. I agree with you. It's got to be from the bottom up. It's got to be real movements, broad movements, and real people, not just intellectuals with, who think they have the ideas. But it seems to me at some point there has to be I'm an advocate of somebody, there has to be an organization expression outside of the Democratic Party, just individuals within or without it trying to influence its positions and ideas and policies has have proved time and time and time again, as you've indicated, to be a dead end. Nothing really, really changes. At least that's my particular view. I agree with you, by the way, that it's got to be a real grassroots thing or it's nothing. And I think that's maybe the problem with the Green Party.
Can I reply to things that Steve had raised?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Please do.
Thank you. No, I see, and I understand what you call, Steve, the pragmatic and the approach, the serious limitations of a lot of these propaganda campaigns that take place at the presidential level, and you and I would definitely agree that that's not the level at which we're going to really be able to begin building an alternative voice for working people. But the big question for me, and I think it's one that cannot be avoided, is the Democratic Party itself. I consider it to be the big obstacle on the path of working people, and labor's continued subordination, I think, is the number one problem, the biggest obstacle that we face in the labor movement. I think it's at the root of the deep crisis that we face, because that subordination takes place not just in the electoral arena. It takes place in the workplace, in the streets, on the shop floor, at every moment when the parameters of how far we can go, what we can do, are clearly marked. So educating and organizing, explaining the nature of that Democratic Party and is so fundamental to being able to move to a real alternative voice. And in using that platform while saying, as Bernie has said, and it's really ticked off a lot of folks in Vermont, I think you realize, that he will not be the spoiler. He has said in advance that he will not run as an independent if he loses the primary elections, which, of course, he will lose, and that he is not going to run in the general election as an independent. So he will turn his voters and tell them, this is as far as we've gone. Our votes now are to be cast for Hillary Clinton. And that's the problem, and it's not a minor one. And I don't think, putting aside, Bernie's strengths are immense, and I do think that there's a lot of space that's going to be opened for people to dialogue with the ranks of people that he's working with to build movements. I think it will open up the space. Unfortunately, it's very likely that space will be closed when the elections are over, because it's more of an electoral movement that he's building rather than a grassroots movement around the issues. But it's up to us to help make sure that those continue and deepen and are developed. But some of the shortcomings, the issue of foreign policy, are not minor. Supporting and voting for continued war funding around the war in the Middle East, voting for the settlements in the West Bank, which are illegal, and so many of these things have to be discussed, too, by people who raise the Bernie Sanders and not just dismissed, in my opinion, as, nitpicking or you know, the Noam Chomsky reference that you have. These are part of a legitimate discourse and debate that we need to have, respectful, and I think this issue of the Democratic Party can't just be dismissed. I think it's really one of the central questions of our time.
Steve, what do you have to say to that?
Well, I mean, as Alan knows better than anyone, why focus on what Bernie's going to tell people after the primaries? Every union in the country, I would safely predict, is going to be telling their members the same thing, you know, vote for Hillary. Sure. And they won't even be putting it in terms of, you know, lesser evilism. They'll be putting lipstick on the pig and, you know, telling their 16 million newspapers, you know, how wonderful she is. I mean, that's what we're up against. And we need to stay in touch with that reality, as I know Alan is, and you as well, Jack. I mean, in 2000, I was very involved in the Labor for Nader effort in the Boston area. We had a super rally with 16 or 17,000 people. We had two national unions that year supporting the progressive third-party candidate, small unions, you know, unions that total membership wasn't even 100,000 then, the CNA and the California Nurses and the United Electrical Workers. That was the extent of labor support for, you know, a progressive third-party candidate, Ralph Nader, with a long history of support for workers' rights. It was running against the, you know, the free trade regime and challenging corporations and, you know, raising in similar fashion to Bernie today, you know, many of the kinds of issues that we'd like to see a movement built around. And he did a pretty good job of turning out huge crowds, but it didn't, fortunately, translate either into any substantial strengthening of the Green Party at the local level, at the state level. In fact, 4 years later, the Green Party fractured and seemed to have spawned two presidential, vice presidential slates. And, you know, the experience of Nader, unfairly, in my view, being accused of spoiling the race for the Democrats, as both of you know, has made union people, you know, very, very risk-averse in the area of supporting third-party candidates ever since, unless you can build a third party like the progressives have done in Vermont that, you know, appears to have a chance of winning. So I think it's harder than ever to get even the activist layer in most unions to kind of break with the Democrats, and it's going to be a challenge, you know, for Labor, for Bernie supporters to get people in many unions to side with him in any of the primaries, you know, where he is going to get a chance to participate in six debates with Clinton. And hopefully critique her, you know, corporate Democratic politics effectively from the left. But unions are already rushing. The Service Employees International Union, second largest in the country, is probably going to be taking a vote of its executive board next month to make an early endorsement of Hillary Clinton. So the national unions are going to be shutting down, even ahead of their usual schedule, any attempt by individual activists and locals to express support for Bernie.
Trump already announced pretty much when Hillary announced her candidacy. It was pretty much an open arms, blank check, we're with you. So I couldn't agree with you more on that. It's going to be a very big challenge. The question is, how do we approach it?
Yeah, but I mean to say, well, if Bernie was running as a, you know, Nader style, as a third-party candidate, somehow this would be easier, and he would get more support, and everything would be clearer to people in the labor movement or anywhere else. I don't think that's true.
Well, I think what we're saying, and I don't think you would disagree, is that we really have to focus on the bottom-up, getting unions locally to run, to build community alliances, local labor community congresses, and begin the very long but necessary task of organizing from the bottom.
Yep. And I think Bernie, you know, again, within the framework of Vermont politics, has been very good at nurturing younger labor movement-based activists, encouraging them to run for office as third-party candidates there. I think that's a lot more significant than, you know, what he does every 4 years when it comes down to a general election choice between a Democrat and a Republican. I mean, I have a good friend, a longtime telephone worker activist in Vermont. 10 years ago, he was kind of a Vermont libertarian. Was not part of the progressive movement. Through his union activity, he gravitated towards the Vermont Progressive Party. He got active, got working on Bernie's campaigns, and Bernie encouraged him to run for the state legislature as a progressive, as a third-party candidate in a very difficult Republican-dominated district in the northwestern part of the state. He got about 30% of the vote in his first try, and is one of a number of union activists in Vermont who've been encouraged to break with the Democrats and the Republicans and even run for office themselves under the third-party banner there. So I think we need two, three, many Vermonts. You know, if we had that kind of stuff going on, that would be the kind of break with the Democrats at the grassroots level that Alan is calling for, and that would be most meaningful.
Can any of you who obviously go way back with Bernie maybe explain to me and the listeners why Bernie has never attempted to build organizations, an organization to reflect the movement outside of Vermont? It seems to me, you know, we're talking about organization here in general terms from the bottom up, which we all agree on, obviously. But how to begin that is the key question, and how to link up the Richmonds, 1, 2, 3 Richmonds, not just 1, 2, 3 Vermonts, which is a phrase you use in your book, Steve. But it would seem to me that someone who believes in these positions that are, you know, so today at odds with the mainstream and the Democratic Party, a party that gives us, you know, Trans-Pacific Partnership free trade on steroids, a party that gives us Obamacare, which now, if you read the reports this week, insurance companies across the country are planning to raise Obamacare rates by 30% to 50% this year. That gives us a destruction of union pensions and so forth. I mean, it's a disaster. It's a disaster position as far as working folks are concerned. The program of the Democratic Party is a disaster for working and middle-class folks, notwithstanding what Hillary Clinton says about the middle class. I mean, that's just token, tell the people what they want to hear and get their vote one more time. But to not try to build, anyone who believes in these ideas, which are, you know, pretty much anathema to mainstream political sources of power in the Democratic Party, not to try to build something, help build something real from the ground up, makes me wonder, you know, what is this all about? Raising issues and ideas to me today just seems not sufficient. That somehow we have to figure out how do we build Richmonds everywhere and then link them up, you see, because one of the problems of American politics, whether it's geographical single issue, single place, or single issue, is we got all these issues all over the country. People are hurting, and people are rising up, but they're not coming together. And I've often wondered, why is it that leaders of the immigrant movement, or progressive unions at the local level, or all these issues, you know, why don't we have a national conference to discuss whether we should bring these leaders from all of these grassroots movements together? That's just my thought. It seems to me good ideas aren't enough anymore. We better do something, and that means organizationally. Steve, critique that.
Well, I think, you know, we got to, when we talk about running left candidates, progressive candidates, whether for a city council somewhere in Vermont or California, a state legislature, for the U.S. House or Senate, when we elect them or when we, you know, develop candidates who've been as effective in building, a campaign base as Bernie has over the years, it's a big job being a public official. When he was mayor of Burlington for 8 years, it was a tremendous business community in the city that he tried to introduce. He did build a progressive caucus on the city council to overcome the opposition of the Democrats and Republicans. House and the Senate. You know, he's often been criticized for caucusing with the Democrats, as if that was a sign of some kind of traitorous behavior. The only way that an independent can function effectively in the House or the Senate is to caucus with one of the two parties. Otherwise, you don't get committee assignments, or in his case, over time, you don't get to be the chair of an important committee. Bernie was the chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee. I don't know. He hasn't spent years and years running around the country in the way that he has in the last year and a half, because he's been trying to do his job, and I think has effectively done that, both at the city level in the 1980s and since 1990 in the House and the Senate, linking up his legislative political work as much as possible with the labor movement, with the environmental movement, and, you know, other groups around the country who have very few, as reliable tribunes as he's proven to be over the years, whatever flaws we can find, in his voting record on some issues.
Alan, you want to take a shot at what I said?
Yeah. Well, I have a soft spot for Bernie Sanders because I began my political work largely under his tutelage, and he was then far more radical, far more, clear about the Democratic Party and why it's an obstacle than he later became as he got involved in the structures of government and had to make the choices that Steve talks about. What I do think is that there's a new situation over the last couple of years that is bringing the issue of grassroots campaigning, labor community coalitions, labor community electoral slates much more to the forefront. And I am encouraged, though I disagree with Bernie's, strongly disagree with the approach of using the Democratic Party for whatever reasons, opening the discussion and all that. I think it miseducates about the Democratic Party and whether or not it can be used as a vehicle for social change, which I don't think it can. I think it's the machinery of co-optation and ultimately takes people down into a dead end, if not worse. But I do think that he is trying to reach out. He's been supportive of the work that we've done as the Labor Fight Back Network, which is just one among many different attempts at bringing together folks from different immigrant rights, from different arenas to say, what do we do to revitalize the labor movement? What do we do to project that revitalization independently in the electoral arena at the local level? So that is his endorsement and support for our work, as has been his support for a number of independent left initiatives, from Richmond to the recent conference that took place in Chicago to others. I think shows that he's concerned and would like to lend a hand. So it's very contradictory, I have to admit, but I'll always give the benefit of the doubt to somebody who's out there and wanting to help build at the local grassroots level. And he, as Steve points out correctly, that he has done that in Vermont. So the task is to extend that. We'll have a new challenge with his role in the Democratic Party. I think we'll have to clarify that, because we're never going to build an alternative that's truly independent and truly a vehicle for change if we don't make clear, as Tony Mazzocchi did, that this is not our party and that it's not our vehicle. And I don't think that he would necessarily... No, his decision, I think, is a qualitative shift. So we're going to have to work with him and debate with him, and that's fine too.
Well, what happens when we get to the point that Bernie isn't going to get the nomination, obviously, and throws in the towel and says support Hillary? What next at that point, Steve and Alan? Steve?
Elders,
well,
go first.
Well, at the Left Independent Political Action Conference that Alan mentioned in Chicago last month, there was a lot of discussion among the left groups which sponsored the meeting about general election strategy, how to pick up the pieces. And Jill Stein was there. Clearly, she's laying the groundwork for another Green Party presidential run. And if you're in a state where she's able to gain ballot status, which is, you know, no easy thing in our system, people will have a chance to, you know, vote for her in the general election, I assume, next year. Like I say, I don't think whether it's Bernie or anybody else, the track record of the last 100 years should lead us to believe that a presidential campaign leads to the organization building of the kind that we need. I mean, the Jesse Jackson experience is certainly probably the strongest case for, you know, people, the pitfalls of working within the Democratic Party, even when the objective at that time was stated to build a caucus, the Rainbow Coalition, kind of a left pole, an ongoing organizational presence in the Democratic Party. You know, that didn't materialize post-1988, largely thanks to Jackson's own misleadership and unwillingness to have a kind of grassroots organization continue on, not necessarily under his personal control, and not connected to one of his, you know, presidential campaigns. And again, I would not put Bernie in that category based on his track record and positive relationship with the third-party building that's gone on in Vermont over the last 25 to 30 years. But clearly, the circus ends after the primaries, and, you know, we're confronted with the usual grim choices and the chance to cast another symbolic protest vote, which I will do, along with maybe 300,000 or 400,000 others in the whole country for, you know, Jill next fall.
And so what happens to the union movement, for example? We go from 6.7% unionized to 4% unionized. You know, it seems like we keep doing the same thing and ending up the same way, whether it's you know, Jackson in the 1980s, or which seems like a similar movement, you know, out just outside the Democratic Party, knocking on the door, saying, "Give me a bigger voice and take me in," and then of course they sure come on in, but we're not going to give you any bigger voice. Seems like a repeat to me. I don't know. I keep going back to this thought that, you know, until the various real movements somehow come together, that nothing is really going to change, and we can repeatedly have these celebrity candidates of different degrees of celebrity, political celebrity, you know, raising these independent challenges, and even sometimes have parties like that have no real broad grassroots base, like the Green Party or even the Labor Party could not, under Mizaki, develop a real grassroots, widespread grassroots base. And of course, that's a dead end too, as you both pointed out. Doesn't go anywhere. But neither does the political celebrities on the left knocking on the door. It seems that neither of those strategies have been produced any real results in terms of change for the last 40 years. Is there another? I mean, if the one doesn't work after decades and the other doesn't work after decades, I mean, does that mean, you know, nothing works? If not, then what else? You know, I keep asking myself, what else? I agree with both of you in your critiques, but I also have this this feeling inside that just raising the issues will get you another 4 to 8 years of what we had, and that we're really running out of time. You know, the American workers and middle class, and whether union or not union, immigrants and so forth, are just being squeezed more and more and more. I mean, there's no lack of issues out there. You know, whether it's minimum wage or whether immigrants' rights or free trade or the new civil rights movement, police brutality, or students, you know, up to their ears and elbows in debt and can't find anything but a half-time service job that pays nothing with no benefits. I mean, there's issues galore everywhere, and people are hurting everywhere. But there doesn't seem to be the right strategy for addressing it. And I'm not so sure that Bernie Sanders, as much as I admire him raising these questions, You know, I agree with you. At least somebody's raising the questions, but then I have this thing that says to me, so what? You know, we're not linking up the issues, the questions, with the real movements, with some kind of organizational strategy that works. And we can go on like this forever and be in the same boat. We're like the frog in a pot of water, and other guys are turning the heat up little by little, and we don't even know we're boiling to death. You know what I mean? This is my frustration that I feel, that we just don't have the right strategy in this country. I'm not sure, and I don't have the answers to that, but boy, I would really like to see real people involved in real struggles and real fights, and there's many of them over there, out there, to come together some place, sometime, somewhere, and start asking, what's the alternative organizationally to all this? I don't know.
Jack, can I reply to your question from earlier? You had asked both of us to comment.
Okay, take it. Run with it.
Okay, thank you. I don't disagree with Steve that this is not the arena at the presidential level where we're really going to see the change that we need. We will, many of us, you know, vote. I was a supporter of Cynthia McKinney. There's Jill Stein. There are other vehicles through which we can express an independent view, even if it's just a protest vote. It's going to happen in the class struggle, directly in the arena of struggle. It's going to happen at the local level electorally. But things are changing in the unions. I know that for our part in the Labor Fight Back Network, we want to help promote a discussion, a dialogue about all of these questions. What was the balance sheet of the Labor Party under Tony Mazzocchi? What were its strengths? What were its weaknesses? Why was it discontinued? What were the lessons of the Chicago Teachers Union, CTU, and the recent municipal elections? There are many lessons. We're going to be using our blog, it's laborfightback.wordpress.com, to open a dialogue on these questions, to bring as many people together around this debate, around this dialogue. Where do we go from here? There are changes even at the top. The recent AFL-CIO Executive Committee in Atlanta, I guess it was February, voted to support a motion by the new president of the American Postal Workers Union, Mark Dimenstein, to withhold funds that go to candidates in elections in six states and use that money, earmark that money for union organizing drives. That's a shift. There was discussion at the follow-up meeting of state and local AFL-CIO bodies about running only Labor's candidates, mind you, in the Democratic Party, but only Labor candidates, which, of course, raises the question, yes, we need to have our own candidates, but should they be run in the Democratic Party, which is not our party? We want to promote that discussion. There's a lot of dissatisfaction. I mean, to have a party now that's pushing standard bearers, and I know that in one way or another, Hillary Clinton's going to be the free trade, whether it's a modified version with so-called labor clauses or labor parallel agreements or wording around the whole issue of currency manipulation. They're going to modify these things to sweeten them, but to ultimately get you to swallow the bitter pill of free trade, destruction of environment, labor, democracy. We know it. There's a lot of dissatisfaction, so it's going to be expressed in building coalitions around fight backs and struggle. I think we're going to see more direct. Then we will have to find ways to coalesce what you're looking for, Jack. It's not going to happen in one conference. It's going to be a whole series of attempts at bringing people together locally. And down the road, we'll have to coalesce into a national fight back structure of some sort if we're going to go anywhere, if we're going to salvage the labor movement.
Steve, any final comment you'd like to make?
Second the motion.
30 seconds? Okay. 3 seconds. Okay. All right. Well, hey, fellas, thanks very much. This was a very intelligent discussion. I really appreciate your coming on and sharing your views. Two very long-time participants in labor and politics, going way back to apparently here Bernie's origins as well. So that was an extra plus to hear from both of you. And I hope we can continue the discussion. And thanks again for your very honest and straightforward answers to these questions, which aren't going to be resolved here, obviously. So, and we will hopefully share this with folks as widely as we can, because I think the discussion was very important. This is Alternative Visions next week. See you again.